The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, this is Mary Grace Payton for the North Carolina Reading Service, and this is Religion in the News. For the next half hour, I will be reading to you from the Associated Press and the Religion News Service. First of all, an article published by the Associated Press on July 6th and written by Ashwini Bhatia. Hundreds of mostly exiled Tibetans celebrate the Dalai Lama's 89th birthday in India's Dharamshala. Dharamshala, India. Hundreds of mostly exiled Tibetans gathered in India's hillside town of Dharamshala to celebrate the birthday of the spiritual leader of Tibetan Buddhism, the Dalai Lama, who turned 89 on Saturday. The Dalai Lama has made the hillside town his headquarters since fleeing Tibet after a failed uprising against Chinese rule in 1959. Representatives of a Tibetan government in exile also reside there. The main celebrations took place in Suglaghang Temple inside the complex where the spiritual leader lives. Tibetan and Buddhist flags adorned poles and railings. A volunteer distributed Indian sweets to exiled Tibetan Buddhist nuns as teachers help children with their makeup as they prepare to perform traditional dances. While a colorful three-tiered cake was cut inside the temple, school children sang, "Happy Birthday, His Holiness." Artists from the Tibetan Institute of Performing Arts, dressed in traditional attire, played the drums and some marched with bagpipes inside the complex, drawing cheers and applause from the crowd. Then Indian and Tibetan flags were hoisted as the band played the two national anthems. Tibetan and Indian officials sat on a slightly raised platform as photos of the Dalai Lama, some from his childhood, hung on pillars around them. The Dalai Lama, however, wasn't present. He is currently in the U.S., where he has undergone a knee replacement, according to his secretary. Addressing the gathering on Saturday, Pinpa Tsering, the president of the Tibetan government in exile, announced that several events commemorating the Dalai Lama's achievements would be held throughout the year. China doesn't recognize the exiled Tibetan government and hasn't held any dialogue with the representatives of the Dalai Lama since 2010. Last month, a group of bipartisan U.S. lawmakers met with the Dalai Lama at his Dharamshala residence, sparking anger from China, which views the exiled leader of Tibetan Buddhism as a dangerous separatist. The Dalai Lama denies being a separatist and says he only advocates substantial autonomy and protection of Tibet's native Buddhist culture. India considers Tibet to be part of China, though it hosts Tibetan exiles. Now an article published on July 8 by the Religion News Service and written by Jack Jenkins. Bills to enhance religion in schools spur fights between faiths. When Louisiana Governor Jeff Landry was asked to defend his support for a new state law requiring public schools to display a version of the Ten Commandments in public classrooms, he made sure to touch on the bill's obvious religious connections. This country was founded on Judeo-Christian principles, and every time we steer away from that, we have problems in our nation, Landry, a Catholic, said during an interview with Fox News. But just a few days later, it was Christian clergy, along with an array of religious leaders and parents of various faiths, who filed a lawsuit against the new statute. Backed by the Americans United for the Separation of Church and State, the Freedom from Religion Foundation, and offices of the ACLU. As a minister, this law is a gross intrusion of civil authority into matters of faith, the Reverend Jeff Sims, a Presbyterian Church USA minister and plaintiff in the case, said in a press conference after the lawsuit. It interferes with the administration of God's word, co-opts the word for the state's own purposes, or claims God's authority for the state. The back and forth is part of a broader fight raging across the country, with conservative state lawmakers, often backed by conservative Christians, pushing faith-focused laws and running into opposition from other religious people and their secular allies. Over the past 2 years, at least 19 states have considered faith-forward legislation, including bills promoting the display or discussion of the Ten Commandments in schools and those allowing for school chaplains. 3 states, Louisiana, Utah, and Arizona, have already passed Ten Commandments legislation, although Arizona's governor vetoed the bill and Utah's legislature walked back their initial proposal, with lawmakers ultimately only adding the Decalogue to a list of historic documents that can be discussed in class. In addition, Louisiana joined 2 other states, Texas and Florida, that have passed laws allowing for chaplains in public school. At least 1 state has achieved similar aims by circumventing the legislative process altogether. Last month, Oklahoma Superintendent of Public Education Ryan Walters issued a directive requiring schools to incorporate the Bible, which includes the Ten Commandments, as an instructional support, and has said teachers who fail to teach students about the scripture could risk losing their license. "We're proud to be the first state to put the Bible back in school classrooms," Walters said in an interview with News Nation. Religious leaders in the state were quick to push back against the directive, however, with one pastor from the more socially liberal United Church of Christ posting, "Public schools are not Sunday schools," according to KFOR. Rachel Laser, head of Americans United, told KFOR her group is mulling a legal challenge like the one they helped file in Louisiana, while Jewish leaders, Muslim leaders, and a local Methodist bishop spoke out. United Methodists believe that the state should not attempt to control the church, nor should the church seek to dominate the state, UMC Bishop James Nunn told KOCO in a statement. "We endorse public policies that do not create unconstitutional entanglements between church and state." While there are some differences, many of the bills share common traits or even language. Most of the bills advocating for displaying the Ten Commandments use a translation of the Decalogue derived from the King James Version of the Bible, a translation that is not embraced by all Christians, much less Jewish Americans or those of other faiths. In fact, the text is slightly different from the King James Version and has a particular history. It is the version compiled by the Fraternal Order of Eagles, used to promote the 1956 movie, The Ten Commandments. The same version was also used on a Ten Commandments monument that sits outside the Texas State Capitol. Bills pushing school chaplains also share common traits, like a byproduct of the religious groups behind them. According to the New York Times, the National Association of Christian Lawmakers, a new group formed in 2020, worked with lawmakers in Florida, Louisiana, and Texas to pass chaplain bills. The Texas bill was also spurred by a group of activists affiliated with the National School Chaplain Association, a group run by former drug-smuggling pirate Rocky Molloy. As debate over the Texas chaplain's bill heated up last year, one Democratic lawmaker in particular, Representative James Talarco, a Presbyterian seminarian, emerged as someone who opposed the bill on both legal and religious grounds. During debate on the House floor, he expressed concerns that NSCA's parent organization, Mission Generation, appeared to have advocated for proselytizing to children in schools. "I see this as a part of a troubling trend across the country of Christian nationalists attempting to take over our democracy and attempting to take over my religion, both of which I find deeply offensive," Talarico told RNS in an interview last year, referring to the chaplain's bill and efforts to pass a Ten Commandments bill in Texas. Republican lawmakers did not amend the chaplain's bill to bar proselytizing or impose credentialing requirements for chaplains, leaving it up to individual school districts to outline parameters themselves. The National School Chaplain Association is referenced by name in the text of Pennsylvania's school chaplain's bill, which was introduced in April. It defines a certified school chaplain as an individual certified by the National School Chaplain Association or some other organization. The NSCA was also mentioned in committee discussions in Nebraska. And where the chaplain's bill have become law, criticism has been a constant, especially from religious groups. In March, a coalition of religious organizations signed a letter condemning efforts to install public school chaplains as greatly flawed and as threatening the well-being, education, and religious freedom of our students. Signers of the letter included entire Christian denominations, such as the Alliance of Baptists, Cooperative Baptist Fellowship, United Church of Christ, as well as other religious groups such as the Union for Reformed Judaism and the Unitarian Universalist Association. Religious advocacy groups such as the Muslim Public Affairs Council, Hindus for Human Rights, the Sikh Coalition, and Baptist Joint Committee for Religious Liberty also signed the letter. In Texas, as school boards across the state gathered in recent months to vote on whether to allow chaplains in their regions, faith leaders regularly appeared to voice disapproval. And more than 100 chaplains signed a petition arguing religious counselors in public classrooms would be harmful to students. In their letter, chaplains decried the absence of standards on training requirements for school chaplains in the bill, aside from background checks. They pointed to military chaplains or those who work in healthcare as a point of comparison, noting requirements like extensive training and instruction on how to work across multiple faiths, conditions absent from the Texas law. Because of our training and experience, we know that chaplains are not a replacement for school counselors or safety measures in our public schools, and we urge you to reject this flawed policy option. It is harmful to our public schools and the students and families they serve, the letter reads. Proponents of the new slate of faith-focused bills appear confident that the courts will back them, especially the current conservative-leaning Supreme Court. Louisiana Governor Jeff Landry declared at a GOP fundraiser that he can't wait to be sued over the state's Ten Commandments bill. And Walters of Oklahoma, who has accused Biden, a Catholic, of wanting to destroy our Christian faith, told PBS he was unconcerned about legal challenges to his Bible directive because justices appointed by Donald Trump would back him. If we get sued and we get challenged, we will be victorious because the Supreme Court justices Trump appointed actually are originalists that look at the Constitution and not what some left-wing professor said about the Constitution, he said. Whether or not justices would actually support the laws is unclear. While opponents of the laws point to ample Supreme Court precedent, suggesting the statutes violate the constitutional prohibition against establishing a state religion, at least two members of the Supreme Court, Justices Clarence Thomas and Neil Gorsuch, declared in a 2020 concurring opinion that they believe the Establishment Clause only applies to the federal government, not the states. While their viewpoint is considered fringe by many scholars, it remains to be seen if others on the court, such as Justice Amy Coney Barrett, agree. And while some of the education bills have died in committee, such as in Nebraska, others have helped spur related legislation. Lawmakers in Indiana, for instance, dropped the chaplain's bill as part of a compromise legislation that allows students to leave school for religious instruction if they request it. But religious opponents to such laws say they are prepared to combat them. In the press conference with those suing Louisiana over its Ten Commandments law, Joshua Herlands, a Jewish parent and one of the plaintiffs in the case, laid plain what he feels the debate is ultimately about. The displays distort the Jewish significance of the Ten Commandments in several places and send the troubling message to students, including my kids, that they may be lesser in the eyes of the government because they do not necessarily follow this particular version, or any version for that matter, of the religious text, Herlands said. The state is dividing children along religious lines. Now, an article published by the Associated Press on July 3, written by Biswajit Banerjee and Krutika Pathy, entitled, "How Did a Religious Gathering in India Turn into a Deadly Stampede?" Lucknow, India. More than 120 people died Tuesday in a stampede after a large religious gathering in northern India, one of the deadliest such accidents in recent years. Authorities are investigating. The stampede among thousands of attendees is believed to have begun as the event, led by a Hindu guru known locally as Vuli Baba, was ending. Authorities believe massive overcrowding, insufficient exits, bad weather, and other factors may have contributed to the high death toll. The event was held in a large tent in a village in Hathras district, located in Uttar Pradesh state, amid sweltering heat and high humidity. Initial reports suggest that the closed enclosure of the tent led to suffocation, causing discomfort and panic among attendees, said senior police officer Shala Mathur. Poor planning was another issue. Some 250,000 people turned up for the event, which was permitted for only 80,000 and held in a muddy field. It's not clear how many were inside the tent. As the preacher descended from the stage, officials said, devotees surged forward to touch him, causing chaos as volunteers struggled to intervene. An initial police report suggests that thousands of people then thronged toward the exits. Many slipped on the muddy ground, falling and being crushed by the crowds. Witnesses describe further chaos as more devotees tried to follow the preacher as he left in his car. His security personnel pushed the crowd back, causing more people to fall, according to officials. Most of the dead were women. Who is Vuli Baba? The Hindu guru's name is Suraj Pal, but he goes by Vuli Baba. He is a Dalit, a group at the bottom of India's caste pyramid, and many of his followers are also from lower castes, female and poor. He was a policeman until the late 1990s when he quit his job to become a preacher. While not a household name nationally, he enjoys a large following in Uttar Pradesh and nearby states. Now in his 60s, he's known for dressing in all white, often sporting mirrored aviator glasses. Vuli runs two ashrams in Uttar Pradesh and follows weekly religious gatherings known as satsangs, where he often talks about leading a simple and virtuous life. The preacher Sri Jaga Gubu organization had spent more than 2 weeks preparing for the event. Police have launched a search for Vuli and other organizers. In May 2022, Vuli held a gathering that drew over 50,000 people, but no casualties were reported. How common are stampedes in India? Deadly crowd surges are fairly common in India, especially during religious festivals where huge gatherings, sometimes in the millions, are held often in cramped areas with shoddy infrastructure and few safety measures. There have been a number of stampedes in India over the past two decades. Many religious events are organized without adequate preparations, crowd control measures, or even permission, said Sanjay Srivastava, a disaster management expert. Often such functions are held so regularly that sometimes police don't check whether guidelines are being followed, he said. The event on Tuesday violated general safety norms, he added. The function was held in a makeshift tent without ensuring multiple exit routes. Typically, there should be 8 to 10 well-marked exits opening into open areas, he said. State official Ashish Kumar said there were insufficient exits in the vast tent. It's not clear how many there were. One of the last major stampedes occurred in 2013 when pilgrims visiting a temple for a popular Hindu festival in central Madhya Pradesh state trampled each other amid fears that a bridge would collapse. At least 115 were crushed to death or died in the river. Now an article published by the Associated Press on July 5, written by Nicole Winfield and Neniek Karmini. Pope to preside over interfaith meeting in Indonesian mosque during longest, most challenging trip. Rome. Pope Francis will preside over an interfaith meeting in a mosque in the world's largest predominantly Muslim country during a four-nation Asian visit in September that will be the longest and most complicated foreign trip of his pontificate. The Vatican on Friday released the itinerary for Francis' September 2nd to 13 trip to Indonesia, East Timor, Papua New Guinea, and Singapore. The packed schedule makes clear that the 87-year-old pontiff, who has battled health problems and is increasingly reliant on a wheelchair, has no plans to slow down. After a day of rest upon arrival in Jakarta on September 3, Francis launches into a typically rigorous round of protocol visits to heads of state and government, speeches to diplomats, and meetings with clergy and public masses. Francis will be the third pope to visit Indonesia, after Pope Paul VI in 1970 and Pope John Paul II in 1989. About 87% of Indonesia's 277 million people are Muslim, but the country also has Southeast Asia's second largest Christian population after the Philippines, and the third largest in Asia after the Philippines and China. In Jakarta, he'll preside over an interfaith meeting at the capital's Istiqlal Mosque, expected to be attended by leaders of the six religions in Indonesia that are officially recognized and protected: Islam, Protestant, Catholic, Buddhism, Hinduism, and Confucianism. Francis is also expected to walk through a tunnel called the Tunnel of Friendship, connecting the Grand Mosque to the neo-Gothic Our Lady of the Assumption Cathedral, which was constructed by Indonesian authorities in 2020. As a result, the last leg of Francis' four-nation trip is likely to heavily emphasize interreligious harmony and tolerance, a theme he has hammered home on many of his foreign visits, especially to the Gulf and other Muslim-majority nations. Sprinkled in the mix in all four countries are encounters with young people, poor and disabled people, elderly people, and Francis' regular meetings with his Jesuit confreres. The trip was originally planned for 2020, but was called off because of the COVID-19 pandemic. At 11 days, it's the longest of Francis' 11-year papacy, outpacing by a few days some of his long trips to the Americas, and recalling some of the strenuous globe-hopping trips of St. John Paul II. It will bring the Argentine Jesuit to the world's most populous, predominantly Muslim nation, Indonesia, as well as one of the world's newest countries, the former Portuguese colony of East Timor, where the Catholic Church wields enormous influence. About 98.3% of its 1.34 million population is Catholic, according to the 2022 census, and it's the Asian country with the highest proportion of Catholics after the Philippines. Francis will be the second pope to visit East Timor after John Paul in 1989, but the first since the country gained independence from Indonesia in 2002. In East Timor, however, Francis may also have to reckon with the legacy of independence hero Bishop Carlos Ximenez Belo. The Nobel Peace Prize winner was sanctioned by the Vatican in 2020 for having sexually abused young Timorese boys and is currently believed to be living in Portugal. Francis had to cancel his last visit, planned foreign visit, a quick trip to Dubai last year to participate in the UN climate conference because of a recurring case of bronchitis. He has seemed in relatively good form in recent months, including during day trips to Italian cities and visits to Roman parishes. But in recent years, as his mobility has been limited by bad knee ligaments, he has generally stuck closer to home and kept his foreign trips relatively short. After he returns to Rome in mid-September, he has a four-day visit to Belgium and Luxembourg before the end of the month, the only other foreign trip that has been confirmed for the year. We have run out of time for today's episode of Religion in the News. I hope you'll listen again next time, and I hope you've enjoyed it. I'm Mary Grace Payton, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Religion in the News is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, please call 919-832-5138. That number again is 919-832-5138. Thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service.